The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boost.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
The storms were rolling through about 3:30 this morning, and my wife's got that app, the 5 News weather app or whatever on her phone, and it goes off at 3:30, lightning detected in your area. Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate knowing that.
In case you didn't see it yourself or hear it or anything.
I've been
like
up
that.
Since 3:35, since lightning was detected in my area. We'll have a little chat about that later.
You might want to delete that app maybe or just put it on mute for the notifications.
Yeah.
You got to figure out something to do with that. But no, it's just nice to have maybe a cooler temperature too here in late August, getting into early September.
Great.
I mean, that part of it's great. But yeah, the weather itself and the rain and all that.
Turn the sprinklers off. No need to water the lawn to keep it from turning brown. You know?
Yeah, I don't have that problem.
No, you live in an apartment. You got it made. You don't have to mow. You don't have to water. You don't have to paint. You don't have to sweep. You don't have to do anything.
Got to walk my dog.
I don't have a dog.
He hates the rain, so imagine how fun that can be. Yep. I'm trying to get him to use the bathroom. So that's about the first world problem that I have to go through. Mm-hmm. But either way, it looks like it's going to be like this weather for a few days still, too. So hopefully we have cooling off weather. And once September, was it 17 days now?
Yep.
Until the Razorback football season kicks off. Hopefully by then you'll have pretty solid weather.
I know Northwest Arkansas got back to school Monday. My kids go back to school today.
So on a Wednesday?
Yeah, today's back to school. Fort Smith schools go back today. So
that seemed kind of weird to have the back school to start on middle of the week.
I always thought that, and I asked a teacher about that. And, you know, first week of school, you remember it. I kind of vaguely remember it. It's a waste, right?
Yeah.
Nothing gets done. Did you accomplish anything your first 3 or 4 days of school? Only that
Never.
One, you had that one teacher that thought, you know, I'm going to break him in right, you know, and
sign a bunch of homework first day, yeah.
Other than that one teacher, you know. So it's like 3 days of acclimation, you know. We're going to get in here and teach him a routine. Then by next Monday, that's the whole goal. Is by Monday, we're going to get down to business. So
okay. I mean, that makes sense.
They're just getting days in, man.
Yeah.
They're already counting down the days till next summer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even in college, it was always known as syllabus week. That first week,
yeah,
everyone just hands out the syllabus and is like, okay, this is what we're going to do. All right. I mean, you got to the point where you didn't have to show up to class for that first week just because of those facts. So, school's starting back up. Everything's just, it's building. It keeps building towards the fall and building towards football season. And these are the signs that make it going. So,
big day at our house. First grade, third grade. Big times.
Did you get all their school supplies?
I paid for all of them. About that.
So, that's good enough.
Hey, I've got a great wife that takes care of all that. They, you know, I guess if I had to do it, I'd be in the middle of it, but she is on top of it.
Back to school shopping?
She doesn't want me involved.
Did they have their outfits ready? Did they pick them out?
Now, it's funny you bring that up. My daughter had narrowed it down to a couple of outfits she was considering.
Considering
that
options.
She was going to wear for day one. My son had not given it one consideration as of last night. Because we were having this discussion right before bedtime. Hey, what do you wear? And Abigail had two or three things. Hey, well, Dad, let me show you. And what do you think of this, this, and this? Not that she really cared what I thought, but she was very proud to
want to show off a little
to
bit.
Show off some of her new clothes. My son, he, you know, is it going to be a Minecraft T-shirt, some kind of Nintendo T-shirt, or, you know, it's probably going to be some kind of gaming T-shirt.
Whatever he opens up the drawer, whatever one's first on top right there is probably the one he's going to roll with.
Oh. He got in big trouble last week. My wife, we about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, they're reaching the age now where we put them in separate bedrooms. So we've separated them before the start of school, and they each have their own bedroom now. They've reached that point. 8 and going to be 7. So it's time. She had worked so hard, Laura did, to get all of his stuff organized and hung in the closet and put up right and all these things. She goes down and looks in his closet, there's not one article of clothing in his closet. Not one. She's like, where did this all go? He had taken everything off of a hanger. We're talking 100 items and just shoved it in drawers in his dresser. Didn't fold it, of course, like I would not.
No, just fit it in there, stuffed it in, whatever.
So she's fit to be tied over this deal because she spent hours getting all this organized and put together and looking neat.
What was his reasoning?
He didn't like, he wanted things in drawers. So she's organizing this back out and figuring out what. Then she, this is what really got him in big in the hot water. She found a wet bathing suit wadded up inside a wet towel in one of the. Like, son, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? The life of an 8-year-old boy.
Oh, those were the days.
I did something like that when I was 8. Still wouldn't be sitting.
Yeah. I probably did do something like that, but
I probably did too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, you do stupid stuff. Like you have that, oh, when your mom walks in, there's like, what's that smell? Mm-hmm. And you don't have an answer because you don't know what it's coming from. And you're like, hey, if I knew where it was, I'd clean it up, but I can't find it.
It's feet.
Yeah. It's like, you can't find it at all. So, but yeah, that's a stuffed towel.
This is
a bathing suit.
It's what you'll have to look forward to someday.
Well, I can't wait. You know what? The way you put these types of stories, Tommy, every time we talk about them on the air, it makes me not really look forward to it, even though at the end of it, you say, this is the stuff you get to look forward to.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Can't wait. If that may
have I told
happen.
You lately how affordable kids are? Have I told you?
No, you haven't, Tommy.
How inexpensive it is to raise children.
No, you haven't, Tommy.
In
yeah,
the year
you
2018.
Jeez. It's like all the things you're making me look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten used to the last few months not having to write a regular check to the lunch lady. You know, because kids got to eat.
Do they still do that? Like where you just have a check and they bring it to the school and they deposit it?
There's apparently some kind of online system. The Kraft household doesn't have the password. No one will make time to go to the school and figure out how to get the password. So
here's just a check.
Daddy just writes a check. And somehow the, you know, so anyway, that was a reminder. It's back to school time. Hey, you need to write a check for lunches. So
do they ride the bus or do you take them?
Oh, no. Ride the bus. Are you kidding?
Some kids have to ride the bus, man.
Yeah,
I rode the bus when I was in sixth grade, but that was the only time I actually had.
I rode the bus in junior high, but I don't think there. We actually live so close to their elementary school. I don't think there would be a bus. They could actually walk. We have actually suggested that,
but
you would have thought that was, you know, some kind of medieval torture or something.
Was it like social suicide or something like that if you go and you're walking to school? Because when I was a kid, if you walked or rode your bike to school, that was the cool thing. If you got dropped off by your parents, it was lame. So I don't know. Maybe kids are changing these days. I don't know.
They'll get to that. They're still young enough that they love mom. They kind of tolerate dad.
Mm.
But they'll grow out of it.
Yep.
You know?
And then they'll say, Dad, can you drop me off about 2 blocks away? Mm-hmm. So that way I don't have to be seen when you drop me off.
Oh, the big dinner time teasing last night was that... And my daughter got in on this, that she wanted to hold her brother's hand walking into school on the first day. And, of course, that was met with great resistance.
Can imagine. I can imagine.
Oh, brother, just hold my hand walking into the school. You're crazy.
Now, that would be social suicide if that was the case. Oh, man.
See, that was kind of funny.
See, I don't have kids. I just have nephews that I have to kind of, you know, laugh at my brother and sister when they go through all this stuff that I remember going through and, you know, just kind of have fun with it until I have some of my own, and then I'm sure I'll go through the same pains and all of that. So,
yep.
Back to school.
First day of school.
That's right. So everybody listening in, good luck to you.
The mimosas would be flowing at 9:05.
The celebration will begin. Get the kids out of the house for a while. That is for sure.
Laura said, I'm not ready for school to start again. I said, are you crazy?
Be the greatest.
Are you crazy?
It's the greatest time of the year, isn't it?
It's a tax, you know, we pay property taxes for this kind of babysitting service. Are you crazy?
You pay for it, essentially. Yes. Going to get your money's worth out of it. Absolutely.
Arkansas's home for the best sports talk. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Adams with it at the 45. Adams skipping. Adams gets outside. Watch out. Hits the sideline. The Jet. Touchdown, Arkansas.
So welcome in former Razorback quarterback Tyler Wilson into the show. And Tyler, we've had a lot of phone calls, a lot of people tweeting in, and me and Tommy gave our thoughts, so we want your thoughts. Just from what you've seen and what you're looking forward to, what will be Arkansas's greatest accomplishment in the 2018 season?
There's a lot of things I think you could take away from that. Probably, you know, bowl game would be one, right? That'd probably be number one on my list. Is the greatest accomplishment would be if we can get to a bowl game, that'd be pretty good. Beyond that, finding some, just because I'm trying to go away from quarterback play and offense for about 10 minutes, I'd like to see a much improved defensive football team. I think that would be good. That'd be a heck of an accomplishment. If I had to pick, you know, and here's my bias coming out. You have a quarterback on the show. He's probably going to say something about quarterback play. I think the number one thing that you could take away from this football season is establishing a quarterback, a guy that for the next 3 years, two, three, 4 years, you can count on. You know what you're going to get. You know there's a maturity process. And let's face it. I mean, that is the face of the program. In a lot of cases, with the modern style, with what's going on, that's going to be the face. That's what helps sell tickets. If you've got a guy, there's no question that Ryan Mallett, when he under Petrino, that was the first piece of the puzzle. And, you know, I think once that he's the one that got the ball rolling. And, you know, beyond Chad Moore, I mean, when we're discussing that, I think that's his number one objective for the 2018 football season is finding a quarterback.
Well, they got options at quarterback, and we know that they're still waiting on the one guy to separate themselves from the other. Still feel like it's going to be either Cole Kelly or Ty Story. But, you know, it's funny, though, that when we were talking about the accomplishments, almost everybody has said just get to a bowl game. And, you know, in a lot of cases, it doesn't really matter how you do it, who you beat to get there. Just getting to the bowl game would be sufficient enough. Because I think it was Rod, I could be wrong about that brought up that extra month or so of practice is crucial to have when if you go to a bowl game, then say if you don't go to a bowl game. I feel like that makes sense, and to have that extra practice is always great. I mean, so Tyler, so how big is that if they make a bowl game, just to have that extra few weeks of practice just to be able to have something going for them into the next season?
I think everybody makes a big deal about mm-hmm. that. You know, I think that there is something to it. I think extra practice, extra time, extra meetings is always good for any program. You can't help but argue, you know, that direction. I think maybe it's a little bit overhyped, but I will say this. For the development of the younger players, I think that's where you get the greatest value. It's not the development of the starters and the older guys. In some ways, I think maybe they even regress from, you know, the last game of the regular season to the bowl game. Just watch the bowl games. A lot of them. You see a lot of rust early on in the football games. So, you know, I don't necessarily buy it for the older players, but I really do for the younger guys, because now you're getting the Connor Nolan, you're getting the, you know, these freshman wide receivers, these freshman tight ends that are coming in are all getting reps during that bowl practice that are very instrumental for their development. But I don't think necessarily the starters get, you know, a tremendous amount of snaps better during the bowl season.
And now with true freshmen and being able to play the four games without using the red shirt up, I think I'm with you that those bowl practices have always maybe been a little overhyped in their importance. But now with the younger players being able to get four games in without losing the red shirt, I think maybe it even loses a little more of its importance.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And we keep talking about these freshmen getting the four games and not getting – you know, not losing a year of eligibility. But, I mean, let's think about that. What freshman are you going to put out on the field and risk in a crucial situation at any point? I mean, even some of these games right now, it doesn't matter who Arkansas is playing this year. You're trying to get wins. I mean, mm-hmm. we're sitting here, we're talking 4 to 6 wins on the schedule. So there's only really four games that you can that anybody's expecting you to win this year. So, I mean, I don't know what four games we're going to put a freshman that has zero to no experience in the game, and we're going to, I mean, we're threatening to get beat here. I don't care who it is, Western Illinois, Eastern Illinois, Louisiana. I don't care, Colorado State. We're fighting to get every win. So I think, you know, for the Alabamas of the world, I think probably that four game, you know, for the freshmen is valuable. But I think for the Arkansas of the world, I don't know how valuable that four game to a freshman is, because how many snaps are you actually going to put them in the game? You're trying to survive. You know what I mean? So I think there's a difference. Oh. I think there's definitely four games Alabama can roll some guys out there with a 30-point lead at halftime and get a bunch of guys some experience and not cost them their red shirt. But how many games this year is Arkansas going to be up 10 points?
Yeah. But you hope that's a one-year
– You hope, yeah.
A one-year deal under Chad Morris, and that right. You grow out of that, that you advance out of that.
It'd be great. Yeah. It'd be great. I think we're – you know, that we could probably have that conversation, feel a lot better about things in a couple of years. But,
sure.
But I think this year
you got to have those four wins to even sniff a bowl.
Absolutely.
I think we all agree with that.
Yeah. And another thing, Tyler, too, that Jeremy Patton, they gave an update on his injury. It doesn't look as serious as what they originally thought, but they're going to evaluate him. He's in a boot right now. So we'll see how all that plays out. And Tommy makes the I guess it's a joke, but it's actually has some serious connotation to it.
Pretty serious,
yeah,
actually, about it.
Thank goodness it wasn't an offensive lineman, just because of how lack of depth that they have at that position. And I think it's so tough, especially with Chad Morris as a coach. It's like, okay, so where do you find that balance of holding a player out, putting him in a green jersey, you know, not going through a lot of contact in fear of having another injury, but then that kind of takes away from them having those live reps, being in in-game situations.
Being ready.
And being ready. I mean, where do you find that balance to try to make sure that you keep your guys protected and healthy, but also making sure that they're getting the most out of their practices?
Mm-hmm. Was it – who's the wide receiver for the Browns that came out and had that Instagram video? Did you see any of this? That he comes out and he's yelling at all the guys that have had a nick on their ankle or, you know, a cut or something like this, and they're hanging out, they're not practicing, they're sitting on the sideline, and I mean, guys getting after them.
Jarvis Landry, is that who you're talking about?
Jarvis Landry, yeah. That's who it is. And I think that is so, I think it's so key to have that environment in your practice and have at least a guy that demands the fact that you practice. If that's your head coach, that's fine. If it's players in the locker room that are driving other guys to practice, I think that's important. For toughness and ability to push through injury and fight and scratch and claw, and that's the nature of training camp. I think we're missing that nature now, now more so than ever, with the modern player, is that they, you know, I'm banged up or nicked up and I'm not playing. That's not the old culture of football by any stretch of the imagination. And so I think having that culture is huge. Now, I don't know what the line is. Obviously, you got to have a trainer. You got to have a guy that you trust to make those decisions beyond just the player. And, you know, whether that's a, you know, for years it was Matt Summers. Matt's, you know, no longer there. But Matt Summers was the guy for years at Arkansas that pulled those and made those decisions. So I don't know what the line is. I think it's different for every player.
It's just unfortunate for Arkansas that's at the offensive line position is where they have the little amount of depth, because, you know, that if there's a unit that you need to have a physical practice, not overly physical, but just to be able to get in there, it is the offensive line. And it's just unfortunate that they've had a few injuries. They were already pretty thin there as it was, but then they have the injuries in fall camp, and you know, you got a few guys on there you just can't afford to lose if you want to put together a good team. And they've been having a few injuries here and there. Hopefully nothing too serious happens, but it's got to be a difficult thing for Chad Morris and this staff to try to figure out and try to make sure that all their guys are healthy for the opening game in just a mere 17 days.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him.
Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
My beef today is this whole situation with the Maryland football program, which we haven't really talked about as much as, say, the Ohio State saga that's going on, which still is yet to be completely resolved, and there's still an investigation going on. By the way, $500,000 is what Ohio State's spending on the law firm to go through that investigation. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. But basically, the situation in Maryland is that there was a player that died because of related reasons where he was a heat illness. They're still, I think they've investigated and said it was whether it was a heat stroke or some type of seizure.
His body temperature was, what, 106?
Yes.
When they got him to the medical facility?
Yes.
So clearly,
yeah,
it was a heat-related illness that led to his death.
And it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was swept under the rug, but it was just something talked about earlier in the spring and then just kind of let go. Well, then ESPN came out with a report saying that there was malpractices, essentially, and the condition of the player and how he was treated and how he should have been treated when he was going through all of this. They could have been prevented from his death. Maryland did an investigation on it, and it looks like they're starting to let some people go. And the head coach may even be let go at the end of the day. And it's just it's such a weird and terrible thing. And a lot of people have been discussing about the culture of how a football program is, because not only did you have this instance, but you also had an instance of verbal abuse, as they put it, inside a football program, which is terrible. But at the same time, you know, you really got to dig into this and figure out what exactly it is when they say verbal abuse.
What is verbal abuse in football?
Did like, you have that, any of that?
Yeah, oh, Tyler.
How many callers called in and probably got their face mask grabbed in high school, and somebody said something that mom probably wouldn't have liked to be said to them, right?
Right.
That's the nature of football. And now we're having lawsuits pending on verbal abuse. That's what's wrong with football. Like that's you know, Brett Favre said, well, you know, how do you make football a safer game? You know, how do we make it safer so mom's not worried about concussions? Well, just don't play. Just don't play.
You know why coaches get after your tail and do some of the things that some people perceive as too tough? And I'm not talking about running people till their body temperature is 106 and they die. I mean, that's obviously, you know, well out of bounds and excessive. We don't need to bring that up. It goes without saying. But it teaches you about life, because do you think every boss you're going to have in life, every client you're going to have, every person you're going to interact with as an adult the rest of your life is going to talk to you nice and sit in a circle and let's do kumbaya together?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much you learn from that. And, you know, if you think everyone that you're going to encounter in your life at when you're 16, 17, 18 is going to pat you on the butt and tell you how wonderful you are, and that's the problem. That's what we do with so many of our young people today. And then they get out in the real world, and then the real world smacks them down like the real world often does. They don't know how to deal with it because no one's ever got after them.
You know, I think mom and dad, There's really two days. There's either the super stern dad that's always hard on his son, right, and never lets off, and he's that dad. And then there's the mom and dad that are always giving the son the benefit of the doubt, you know,
right,
that's always give you a pat on the butt. And, what I appreciate about my parents and my dad especially, and at time he was kind of a little bit stern probably as a child, but I'll say this. He was never my coach. I mean, I go back to maybe like one year in little league basketball. He was my coach, maybe in like kid pitch, or not even kid pitch. It was like, you know, coach pitch, you know, but like, it was like my first 2 years of playing any kind of sport. Beyond that, he was never my coach. And, you know, we'd save it for the car. Did we have our arguments and disagreements and you know, crying and tears and all that everybody else has when sport? Yeah, but none of that happened. We got to the car, and then it all all heck broke loose sometimes. But he was never my coach. And what I think it was valuable is it taught me the ability to be so diverse and understand, one, I had really good coaches. I had really bad coaches at times, too. But all of those things, and I really can't even think of a horrible experience I ever had with a coach. Even, you know, there were some guys that probably didn't know the X's and O's as well as some other coaches, but it taught you the ability to be diverse within personalities, within different philosophies and thought processes, and you make the best of it. And I think that's what allows you to be successful while we play sports. And, so I don't know. I just took that away from what you just said there. But, you know, even on to high school and college, yeah, I had some things said to me at the college level that were borderline abusive, no question. But I think at that level, sometimes it's probably necessary.
Are you a tougher adult mentally as a result of that? Does more roll off your back as a result of that life experience?
There's no question. There's no question. And I think my expectations for me as a person are 10 times what they would be if I didn't have it.
Well, and even
so
this.
So you're saying you were better served by that experience?
No question.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and I think you can agree with this too, Tyler, that a lot of different players, since we're talking about football, it's the main argument we're making, that a lot of players respond a lot differently from certain things. Some players play better, perform better, when they have a coach absolutely rip them in front of everybody. It just either makes them mad or motivates them. But there's also some players that don't respond as well to that, but may respond in other ways of criticism. Well, and I'm not saying that you need to have a coach that figures it out and you can't yell at a certain player ever. But it's always about the coach finding out what triggers that player and puts him in a position to be successful.
Tell me what person naturally just plays better when they get yelled at. Nobody does. Nobody like naturally is that player. Everybody, when they get yelled at, the natural is let's go crawl up in a ball in the corner and hide and tear up, and that's what everybody wants to do. But it's a trained and it's a learned habit to be able to deal with the pressure and the scrutiny and then you try to figure out, you learn as a player, I'm going to turn that demeaning spirit into frustration, and I'm going to go use it to my advantage, and I'm going to prove somebody wrong. And then that's the when you learn that trait and that aspect, and you now don't want to go cuddle up in the corner and cry and be be pampered by somebody, but no, I'm going to take it upon myself to show them that that's not who I am and that's not how I am as a person and prove them wrong. Now you're taking the initiative. And I think once you get to that mindset is where you really become valuable as a player. And those are the kind of players that you want on your team, because those are the guys that are going to make the difference. Those are the guys when it's hot and it's in the fourth quarter and it's 2 minutes to go in a driving rainstorm like Chad Morris is talking about. Those are the guys that are going to make the play.
Also, consistency, too, because I'm sure with Petrino, when you were playing there, he was that way with everybody and kind of at least had that approach. At least that's the vibe I got. I could be wrong, but it seemed like he wasn't shy to tear somebody up if they needed to be, no matter who they were or what position they played.
It's not always the best player. Yeah, it's not always the best player, too. It's the best player is not always like that. Now, but I do think there's something, too, when it was crucial and it was for the game, those personalities shine.
I think it's fascinating.
I might be completely off, but that's my experience as a player.
Yeah. Well, that's why we have you. I mean, not many people have that experience to know what it was like. And, and the fact that you played with Petrino, I think, makes it even more fascinating, because I think all of us from the outside looking in was like, he looks like a very intimidating man when he gets mad, and he's always mad. I don't know. Was there ever a time where you saw him, like, happy? Like a happy guy, like making a joke or two and just saying, let's cut up a little bit, Tyler. Yeah, was he ever that?
Yeah, but it wasn't often. I mean, it was probably how you perceive Saban.
Tommy.
Not Tommy.
Yeah.
I don't think it was as bad as everybody thinks.
It has to be your genuine, sincere style of managing people. That's not – when I go into that mode, I'm uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'll go into that mode every now and then when I'm mad, but it's not how I go about doing my day-to-day business. It's just not my style. It's not what I'm comfortable doing. For Petrino, he doesn't know any other way. For Bielema, it was a whole other way of doing things. For Chad Morris,
Chad Morris
Different. It's more in the middle, as we saw a little bit this week. So, I mean, you got to be who you are. And it all works. It's just, there's more than one way to skin the cat. So, I mean, it all works. You just got to find the way to do it. But you got to own it. You can't try to lead a team or coach players or run things by fear and intimidation if that's not who you are as a person.
Yeah.
Or it'll never work.
Yeah.
Right.
Stay consistent.
If I tried to do that, it would be a miserable disaster because I'd be stressed all the time. Because I just couldn't do that.
Yeah, we don't want you
to
do
that. For Petrino, if he tried to do it and be nice and tried to coddle people, he couldn't do it. It wouldn't work for him.
In fact, most of the players would probably think that something was weird, like maybe was he drunk or something like that, just because of that, if that was the case. No, but all coaches are different in that. And, I just think it's fascinating to see of, going back to the original case of what's going on at Maryland. Obviously, the conditioning part of it and the player dying, that's nothing to sneeze at. But when it talks about the toxic culture of a verbal, abusive relationship from the coaches to the players, that's something you really got to dive into and understand exactly what it's referring to as well.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.